Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
92.9 FM ESPN presents the area's only national columnist who spends his afternoons bringing unique perspective to Memphis radio. He'll make you think. He'll make you laugh. He'll sometimes make you change the station if children are around. And he apologizes in advance for that. It's 4 o'clock. Let's get into it. This is the Gary Parrish Show. Today's special guest host is Matt Stark.
All right. I am back. Matt Stark in studio today. Thank you, Bradley. This Thursday, January 17th edition of the Gary Parrish Show. You can hit me up on the Twitter, the Matt Stark. Brad Carson across the glass. How are you, sir?
Doing well. I'm doing better than the Grizzlies.
Oh, God, that's so depressing.
I'm more excited to hear what Gary's got to say because he is at Cameron. He's in Duke on the campus.
Yes.
There. Doing work.
And probably we'll be
tired,
joined
though,
by him momentarily. Be joined for him for a majority of the first hour. GP, spending time, Coach K.
Yep.
Zion, want to hear about that. They get a big game this weekend. Since it's Thursday, we'll also be joined by John Martin from the Jason and John Show. And at 5 o'clock, we'll catch up with Jeff Calkins. Of course, we'll get to some stories later in the 5 hour and then do dinner to go and then get you ready for your Thursday evening. But we open with Gary Parrish, who is live from Durham, North Carolina. GP, I trust no TSA horror stories getting out of New York City this morning, getting you down to where you need to be?
Well, there was airplane issues, but no TSA issues. I got through security, no problem. Got my normal spot in the Delta Sky Club at LaGuardia, no problem. Then we got on the plane. I got in my seat, no problem. And then we just sat on the runway for about an hour. I honestly fell asleep, so I don't even know what the actual explanation was. I just slept through the whole day. I was so tired. So I don't even know why we sat on the runway, but we did sit on the runway for about an hour, hour 15. But I did eventually get to Raleigh, did eventually get to Durham. I'm sitting now in the seats inside Cameron Indoor Stadium overlooking an empty court that will be filled with NBA prospects on Saturday night.
Nice. All right. Well, I certainly want to talk to you about what you're doing down there in Zion and Coach K and Duke and all that, but we'll get to that in a little bit. Let's start with the Grizzlies, because why not? They had a really exciting play last night when JaMychal Green vaporized a fellow human, and then they couldn't really ride that wave, suffered their 10th loss in 11 games. And I saw this from the Grizzlies commercial appeal beat writer David Cobb. It is the longest losing streak now with Mike Conley and Marc Gasol both healthy, the longest streak that you're on since Mark's rookie year of 2008-2009. And like, I don't need to tell you because you do this every single day. This isn't fun when you got to prepare to talk about another loss, and, you know, the ensuing now what? Like, it's already gotten old, and we're only on January 17th.
Yeah, it does become, you know, I mentioned this last season. Last season was the first season where the Tigers and Grizzlies both weren't good.
Mm-hmm.
For the, you know, the first season in a long time when that was true. But at least the Grizzlies were still interesting, and the Tigers were still interesting because with the Grizzlies, you could consistently talk about, you could explain to people who, for whatever reason, couldn't grasp the concept of tanking and why it was important to do, you could have that conversation over and over again and sort of follow the bottom of the standings. And then with the Tigers, you could explain to people who couldn't quite grasp how bad Tiger basketball had become under the previous coaching staff. You could day after day explain to them why a coaching change needed to happen. But in this particular season, I mean, the Tigers are obviously better, and they're interesting because Penny's first year is just interesting. But the Grizzlies are bad, but also uninteresting.
Mm-hmm.
There's no point to this losing like there was a point to last season's losing. This is just being bad, and I think the point you made, that David made via the commercial appeal, is very important, and it's something that I talked about yesterday, I guess it was, with Joe Mullinax, and that's that when the Grizzlies have been bad for the past however many years, it usually coincided with either Mike being out or Mark being out or Mike and Mark being out. And so you could always, as recently as, you know, this preseason, sort of preface everything you say about the Grizzlies with this. as long as Mark plays X amount of games and Mike plays X amount of games, mm-hmm. the Grizzlies are going to be competitive. The Grizzlies are going to be good. The Grizzlies are going to be able to compete for a spot in the Western Conference playoffs. And you would always hear, whether it was Jeff saying it or basically anybody else, if you could tell me Mike's going to play 70 games and Mark's going to play 70 games, then I'm going to tell you that they're going to win enough games to be in the Western Conference playoffs. Well, you look up now, and Mark's on pace to play in excess of 70 games, and so is Mike. And I know Mark hasn't been healthy, but he's playing. He's on the court. Mm-hmm. And so this bad version of the Grizzlies, and it has gotten bad.
Yeah.
No energy, no fight, no nothing, to the point where, you know, I'm in a group text with people who work for the Grizzlies and people who are season ticket holders with the Grizzlies, and, you know, they're always just, like, positive, love, always see the good in everything.
Mm-hmm.
And even there, some of them are like, I hate this team. I can't stand watching them now. Because it's one thing when you're just undermanned. It's another thing, and they are undermanned.
Yeah.
But it's another thing when you're undermanned and you're just not fighting anymore. You're not playing the way that we usually watch the undermanned team, undermanned Grizzlies play.
Yeah.
And so it's gotten to a bad place. And you can no longer say, or rather, you can no longer blame it on the absence of Mike or Mark or both. And you can no longer say these words. As long as Mike is playing and Mark's playing, the Grizzlies are going to be good. Because
mm-hmm.
it's not true anymore. It might have been true once upon a time, but it's not true anymore. Mike's playing, Mark's playing, and not only are they not good, they're embarrassing. They're getting humiliated night after night after night, most recently last night on their home court by the Milwaukee Bucks.
To your point about being boring, I mean, I think that fans – kind of like, and I know we talked about this last year, and it was with the Tigers. It's different for college because you can always point to next year like, well, we got recruiting. You know, we got, at this point, we didn't know that Tubby was going to be gone. But then as soon as that, like, everybody jumps in because they're like, man, we got hope. We got this to plan for. This team doesn't have that. Like, by this point last year, everybody was on board, you know, pretty much with Team Tank and, all right, what do we need to do? Right now, I mean, yeah, it's tough to watch. Without the reserves last night, the bench that came in that second quarter, like, they would have lost by 100. Like, they looked terrible. I mean, Jamichael Green, that dunk, started the spark. And then, you know, Caspi played well, and Shelvin Mack, God bless him, is playing better again. He's up and down. But, like, it's just whatever they're doing. And I do feel badly, in a way, for Justin Holiday. I know he had another rough game last night. It just hasn't worked for him yet. And they interviewed him. I watched the postgame show and all that. And, you know, he kept talking about trying to be comfortable and learn the guys. And, you know, I get that. And I get that it's going to take a little bit. But, you know, we don't have a lot of time to wait around, number one. And then he's also stepped into a situation that can't be easy when you come in and – you know, the team had tried to trade a couple guys, and then they finally do, and then you get here, and then there's team meetings, and there's, you know, there's the Royal Rumble in the locker room, like, as soon as you walk in, or you're in the aftermath of that, and, like, it's got to be difficult for a new guy to step into this and just kind of look around and be like, you know, what the hell's happening?
Well, yes, clearly, but I also think there's an argument to be made that if your front office is going to give up two, you know, good second-round picks to get the new guy.
Mm-hmm.
The new guy should be playing through his mistakes, the same way Jaren Jackson should be playing through his mistakes. Like, what is the point of giving up something to get something that you're not going to use? Like, I'm not going to sit here and try to convince you that Justin Holiday has been good when he's on the court for the Grizzlies. The only thing I would try to convince you of is that you keep playing until he is good, until he is comfortable, because he has shown himself in other situations to be a guy who can play, you know, big minutes, major minutes in the NBA. I know not for a successful team, but still, he's a competent NBA player. Otherwise, there would not have been a market of two second-round picks to get him. And so I just think it's completely counterproductive to bench him, you know, after an undeniably rough start. Because then you just gave up two second-round picks, probably picks in the 30s, that – to get something that you're not using. It'd be like giving up two second-round picks to get me. Like, why would you do that? You're not going to use me. Why would you do it if you're going to get somebody you're not going to use? But I want to circle back to your initial point about it just being sort of depressing and boring, because I do think you hit on something there about where Tiger basketball was this time last year as it relates to where the Grizzlies are right now. It's why I kept screaming day after day after day, even when people were pushing back. Nobody likes to admit, because everybody's got penny fever now, and everybody loves the idea that James Wiseman's coming, and everybody thinks this team is actually fun and exciting. Whether it's at a high level or not is unclear, but it's fun, and it's been entertaining, and it's been a good season, and it's been nice to see 15,000 people in that building. Nobody likes to admit that they pushed back on me last season, but a lot of people pushed back on me last season. I think people got on board for the most part late, but when I initially started pounding the drum that, you know, Memphis needs to make a coaching change, the reason I was making it is to avoid the exact situation in a different sport and a different level that the Grizzlies are in right now. My point being this, if you would have just brought that staff back, it would have been another depressing year. There was nothing tangible, not a single thing to think that it was going to get any better than it was. It was a bunch of, you know, not good enough players that the fan base did not believe in. It was a coaching staff that never connected. The fans weren't going to re-engage. Nothing good was going to happen. That's why it was so depressing. That's why it was so important to snap your fingers, pay the $10 million, make a coaching change, and hire the guy who could bring back the fans, bring back the season tickets, bring back the donations, and bring back the recruiting. That's what they did. Mm-hmm. Now they're in a good place. The problem is that you cannot do that in the NBA. You just sort of, if you're following the analogy, you just got to live out the Tubby Smith era a little bit. That's what the Grizzlies are about to do, barring a big surprise or getting super-duper lucky in the draft and somehow ending up with the number one pick and bringing in Zion. You are going to be bad right now, and then there's no, you know, reasonable way, intelligent way to make an argument where you can see them being anything but this or worse next season. Mm-hmm. And the NBA, as we've learned over and over again, unless you're the type of place that can snap your fingers and get big-time free agents to come,
yep.
And even right now, that like kind of place doesn't even exist. Like, it took the Lakers a while to get one to come.
Mm-hmm.
But unless you're type that, there is no quick rebuild. Once you get bad, it takes you a minute to get not bad. And I think we're either right at the beginning of that or right in the middle of that. Hopefully not too far from the end of it, but we're in it. This is what the Grizzlies are right now.
Yeah, we in it. There's no doubt about that. We're talking Gary Parrish. He is in Cameron Indoor Stadium. We'll get to that in a little bit. Something that was interesting last night, because, yeah, everything you just said rings true to everybody that's watched the Grizzlies, that there's no quick fix coming at the end of the year. Brad and I were talking before the show. Like, at least by this point last year, you could make the argument, man, we just got to lose every game that we can lose and try to get the best pick that we can get in that top three, get in that top four. And it worked. And they got Jaren Jackson, and he's been everything that Grizzlies fans that hoped that he would be. Well, that option isn't out there at the end of the year. Like, you won too many games early to be one of the really, really, really bad teams in the NBA. And even if you really go into team tank from here on out, there's no real guarantee that you're going to get that payoff. Now, I know that they've changed how they do the lottery a little bit, and I was listening to Jeff this morning on his show, and he was talking about how you still have a 10% chance of getting Zion or somebody like that, RJ Barrett, whatever, if you can get into that situation. Like, I mean, but I don't know that anyone's quite figured out where we are with this team. Last night, JB Bickerstaff was saying, watched him, talking about how they all needed to participate in their own rescue. And then when he was asked if there were any drastic changes planned because they've lost 10 of 11,
right,
he said nothing is off the table. But my question is, that sounds great. Yeah, let's consider everything. But what options are out there? Like, who are you taking out of the lineup and putting in that's going to be any sort of a difference maker that's going to make things look any different than they've been looking?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's an obvious way they get better unless they just start playing better. It will be, I think JB's exactly right. You know, if we're going to pull out of this thing, it's got to be the same guys you're watching lose every night, they got to pull out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it ain't like, you know, you can call three dudes up from South Haven and get things fixed. Like, if this is going to get fixed, the guys you're watching get overwhelmed on the court night after night after night, they're the ones that have to fix it. And that's not impossible. You know, like, NBA teams, you know, have roller coaster rides all the time.
Yeah.
Even really good ones. Like, the Boston Celtics have gone through it. Last mm-hmm. night they looked good. Now they got Kyrie Irving and Gordon Hayward and Al Horford and Jason Tatum. It's a little bit different cast of characters.
Mm-hmm.
But my point is, it's not impossible for a team that has been good and that the Grizzlies started well, that then gets bad, that's what they are now, to get good again. It's not unheard of. So I guess that's still out there, but they'll have to do it. It'll have to be the same guys that have lost 10 and 11 trying to make this thing something different than what it is. I don't know that that's likely, but I also acknowledge it's not impossible. What's tough about the current situation, besides the obvious, is that last year when they got bad and Mike was hurt, there was only one smart thing to do. Mm-hmm. You know, there was other things you could do, and some people argued these other things you could do, but there was really only one smart thing to do, and it's exactly what they did. They pivoted into a hard tank, and they tried to get, put their team in a position to lose as many games as possible, to increase the lottery odds, to pick as highly as they could in the 2018 NBA draft to get a potential star. And not only did they execute that well, they got the right guy, it appears, also, and that's Jaren Jackson Jr. Without them hard tanking, when they committed to it, Jaren Jackson Jr. would be playing somewhere else right now. So that worked well. It was the clear thing to do, the obvious thing to do, and they did it, and they executed it. Right now, there is not an obvious thing to do, mm-hmm. because if you wanted to hard pivot into a tank again, you're probably a little too late in a league where teams were tanking from the jump. Like, can you get where it is you were last year? Can you get as bad as you need to get to make it worth your while? I'm skeptical of that. On the other hand, you don't even know if you want to do it, because what's more important, to try to get the highest pick you can get in this draft or to try to get the worst pick you can get in this draft so that you can move the pick to Boston and just be done with that obligation? I think that's something the franchise front office is probably still struggling with. I think the consensus is that you want to be good enough to go ahead and convey the pick this year and be done with it, just have it off your books and be ready to move in another direction. But there is an argument to be made we're not going to be good enough anyway, because they might not be. So, like, if we don't think we can get good enough to convey the pick, then the smart thing is to get as bad as we can get, mm-hmm. and increase our lottery odds, because we're keeping the pick no matter what. But we are in a little bit of in-between land right now. It'd be probably a clearer answer if Mike or Mark were shut down. Then it'd be like, okay, we're not going to be able to convey the pick, so we are going to be bad. Let's just go into full tank and increase the odds to whatever point we can increase them that we get Zion Williamson or R.J. Barrett. But it's last season, I guess I'll bottom line it this way. Last season, by the time they got to a certain point, and for me it was like before Christmas. I don't think for the Grizzlies it was till maybe January.
No.
But by the time we got to a certain point, it was obvious what the smart thing to do was.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that it's obvious right now what the smart thing to do is, because that pick that has to be conveyed to Boston at some point factors into what's happening.
Yeah, and when you talk about, if they're able to lose enough games, I mean, you look at the standings, and Cleveland's got 9 wins. The Bulls and Knicks both have 10. The Suns have 11. You're not catching any of them. Like, none of them are going to allow you to lose more than they're going to lose. Atlanta's got 14 already. That's a 5-game difference, so you're not catching them most likely, which means the best you're doing is 6, which is where Washington's at 18. So, yeah, it's kind of like what Jerry West used to talk about when he was the GM, kind of that NBA purgatory. You're not bad enough that you can get really good by getting a top 3 player in that lottery. And you're not good enough that you're going to be able to compete the way you want to compete. And that's where this team is. And it's depressing. I mean, I've coming off that year of last year, and everyone's like, okay, again, for everything we kind of just covered, all right, we're going to add Jaren to the mix. With Mike and Mark as the core, we're going to be okay. And yet here we are where everyone's trying to figure out, man, like at what point do they finally just, I guess before the trade deadline is when they finally have to figure out. But by then, it's likely too late to take 2 options of the road, right? It's like when you're running out of gas. Do I try to keep going down the highway and make that next station that says it's 10 miles, or do I get off now? Like, at some point, once you pass that exit, it's too late to turn back.
Yeah, they're in such an in-between place now that even if it does get to a point where it becomes crystal clear, now it's time to tank because we're keeping the pick,
mm-hmm.
they won't be able to tank well enough for long enough to get them to where it is you'd like to be to have even a reasonable hope of landing the type of pick that can deliver a guy like Jaren Jackson. And then this draft, I think, really, last season, whether this is right or wrong, last season people thought it was either a four-player or five-player draft, depending on what you thought of probably Trae Young.
Yep.
You know, everybody agreed, pretty much everybody agreed that, you know, there was DeAndre Ayton, there was Luka Doncic, there was Jaren Jackson Jr., there was Marvin Bagley, and then some people might throw Trae Young or Mo Bamba in there, maybe even Wendell Carter, but for most people it was like a four-player draft or a five-player draft, and if you could get there, then your tanking was worth its effort. I think most people with this draft think that it's probably a two, maybe a one, but probably a two, and the two would be Zion Williamson and R.J. Barrett, two guys that practice on this court I'm looking at earlier today and will be playing on it Saturday night. It does not mean that Ja Morant can't turn into a star or Rui Hachimura can't become a star or that DeAndre Hunter can't become a star or Cam Reddish or Romeo Langford or any of these other guys that are projected to go in the top 10 or even the lottery. Giannis is a star. He was not drafted in the top five. Damian Lillard was a star. I don't know that many people thought he was going to be that coming out of college. So if the Grizzlies are bad and keep the pick, there will be a franchise-level guy or at least a high-level borderline all-star guy that will be picked either with their pick or after their pick. It happens almost every draft, but it's not as crystal clear who that guy is or that there's a lot of them the way it seemed to be this time last year, which makes tanking, you know, at this point or any point later than this point, the possible prize isn't quite as obvious. And so that's why, again, the difference between these losses and last year's losses is so drastic. Last year, after a loss, you might be the type who just hates watching your favorite team lose. But if you were smart about it, you could go, all right, big picture, this is a good thing.
Yep.
This could be the thing that helps us get Jaren Jackson.
Yep.
At this moment, there is no big picture good thing to the Grizzlies losing games. It's just bad and sad watching not just the Grizzlies, but the Grizzlies, led by Marc Gasol and Mike Conley, lose games to this extent because, you know, it's been a long, long time since we've ever seen the Grizzlies with Marc Gasol and Mike Conley healthy lose like this.
Back-to-back years, too. They start to grind on you. They do. All right, we're going to talk to you when we come back about what you're doing down in Durham, and we'll catch you on the flip side of this break.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
All right, welcome back. Matt Stark in studio in Memphis. Gary Parrish joining us from Cameron Indoor Stadium. GP, I know yesterday big news was that Penny Hardaway announced that Little Penny's coming back in some sort of capacity soon. And today, Big Penny, during his weekly press conference, announced that Memphis may or may not be wearing throwback gear for what the school has already said is going to be their annual Memphis State throwback game. So I'm not quite sure how they have a throwback game if, like, the team's not in the Memphis State gear. So I'm figuring they're going to figure that out by Saturday. But either way, like, that's red meat to the fans. You throw a lane of the old school Tiger and the Memphis State logo and people are showing up and they're excited about it.
No, for sure. And I mean, unless I don't understand the definition of throwback, I would imagine they've got to be in Memphis State gear. And yeah, you know, most people around my age and certainly older, like, you grew up with Memphis State. Like, I think my father probably still often refers to Memphis as Memphis State. If you talk to older people around the country, their first memories are not of Derrick Rose and Chris Douglas Roberts. It's of, you know, perhaps Larry Finch and Ronnie Robinson, maybe a little later, Keith Lee and Andre Turner, a little later, Elliot Perry. But, you know, the memories are Memphis State. Penny Hardaway obviously involved in that as well. So that'll be neat. If it goes down the way it appears it's going to go down, you know, fans will get a kick out of that because, I mean, there's a market for it. I mean, you walk around, there's still people wearing Memphis State shirts, Memphis State hats. So, you know, Memphis is one of the basketball programs that has a proud tradition, and fans do revel a bit in the history of it. And the history will be right in your face on Saturday inside FedEx Forum. So if they are doing it the way it appears they're going to be doing it, I think it's smart, and I think it'll be well received.
Got to ask you about a weird scene last night in the American Conference in Tulsa between UConn's Dan Hurley and Tulsa's Frank Haith. They were both ejected in the second half after getting a double technical. There was some jawing back and forth, whatever. But the second is what made it interesting, the second technical. Hurley, apparently trying to show no hard feelings kind of thing, starts to move towards Frank Haith, and with his hand extended, like not, you know, fist balled or anything like that. We didn't have any controversy like that shaping up. It was still weird, though, because I've never seen another coach go for a handshake like during the game, but whatever. He's moving in to try to be like, hey, let's just get back to the game. And the officials come up, and I'm sure you saw this and most likely talked about it, but they hit them both again with another technical, which is the double ejection. After the game, Hurley was just incredulous, and I think from what I read, Frank Haith was more or less along those same lines. Have you ever witnessed a double ejection of coaches before?
No, I'm not saying it's never happened, but I don't remember it ever happening. It was undeniably a weird scene. So what happens is, there's a call made in the game. Dan makes the call. I mean, the ref makes the call. Dan's upset about the call. At some point, Dan and Frank start talking to each other as opposed to the ref, and the ref hit them both with a technical, like, hey, cool it, shut up. And then, just as long as we're being fair, like, Dan's wild. Like, both the Hurley brothers are wild, right? probably Bobby more than Dan, but they're both they'll both snap, you know. They both have a short fuse. So I'm not as sure. I'm not saying it's untrue, but I'm not as sure as maybe some people are that Dan was genuinely just trying to extend his hand and say, hey, Frank, we're all good. I'm sorry I said those words. Like, you ever seen sometimes, maybe it's guys in a bar or guys wherever guys start acting like this, where, you know, a guy will be like, hey, what's up, man? Well, you good? But it's aggressive, you know, and it's like, it's very aggressive, and it's not kind. It's to create a certain situation to show that you're not scared of the other person. Whatever it is, men who are much more manly than I do, they'll know. They could probably explain it better than I.
I've got kids. They do the same thing every time I tell them to apologize to one another. It's the same situation.
Right. So it might have been one of those. Like, I'll go aggressively shake your hand and just show you like you're not going to talk to me like this. And so, you know, but maybe Dan was being genuine. Maybe he was just being, as I explained. Either way, if you're the official, I think you have to de-escalate the situation as opposed to remove both coaches from the game. Because when it comes in the same week, Mick Cronin, another American Athletic Conference coach, got thrown out of a game and subsequently said these officials need to be held accountable. Like, they will talk to us in a way that they wouldn't talk to us unless they knew we were coaches and we can't do anything about it. Mm-hmm. And you saw Scott Padgett earlier this season say the same thing. Like, an official got in his face. And Scott Padgett was like, I'm 6'11", 280 pounds. that guy wouldn't be getting in my face, except for that he knows he's got all the power. I can't do anything. And so this is a real dynamic problem among coaches and officials. Now, to be clear, I think the solution is probably the coaches need to chill out. Like, I thought it's crazy forever that coaches, college coaches particularly, can talk to officials the way they talk to officials, because it might not come across on television, and perhaps you can't even see it from the stands, but if you ever sit close enough to a college bench, the way these coaches talk to these officials, both of them, is just, for the, like, most coaches, not all, it's crazy. And Chris Mack had a funny line, the Louisville coach, about it the other day. He said, it is kind of weird because, you know, we come out with our teams, the officials come out, we're getting ready to start the game. Any basketball game you watch, you'll see this scene. And the officials go through the coaching staff, and they all shake hands. It's like, hey, good to see you. How you been? Good to see you. And then we throw the ball up, and we're yelling at each other nonstop for the next 2 hours. It's just a weird deal. So I think the first thing is that the coaches need to calm down, and that probably needs to come from above, you know, from at the NCAA level. But you tell them in the preseason, hey, the way you used to talk to officials, the way maybe you used to talk to each other, it's over. We're going to start hitting you with technical fouls. We don't want to throw you out of the game. So just know that we will, so don't make us do it. But the NCAA has never done that. And so it's just sort of, it's the way it is. Coaches talk to officials the way they talk to officials. And given that that's the reality of the situation, I thought what happened last night in Tulsa was just a bad scene. That official had too quick of a trigger. Frank and Dan both agreed with that. And by what I'm told is that Frank and Dan talked after the game. They're cool, but they both think the official probably got a little out of hand, and I think that's actually right.
Let's get to why you're down at Cameron Indoor Stadium, having hopped the plane earlier today from New York. So it's number 4 Duke and number 1 Virginia on Saturday. That'll be a great game. What's the angle that you're down there for? Is it just in advance of that? Is it the Zion story? What are you doing?
Well, I booked it to come here in advance of Trey Jones getting hurt. And the main reason is for our 24-hour, 7-day-a-week online streaming news network, CBS Sports HQ. They've invested because it's exceeded all expectations and is growing, you know, in a way that I don't want to say nobody anticipated, but in a way that they hoped for, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so they invest in sending some of us, not all of us, but some of us out to big events. For instance, we'll have a CBS Sports HQ reporter, somebody like myself, at the AFC Championship game, at the NFC Championship game. We'll have cameramen there with them. I have a cameraman, my buddy Dane, here with me at Cameron Indoor. So they actually fly cameras in with us to do live hits. I've already done 2 from Cameron Indoor today. So my primary focus is for CBS Sports HQ, but given that I'm a writer, I will also write. And I'll be writing tonight from the hotel, and I'll be writing from Cameron Indoor on Saturday. And the reason I'm here is simply because not only was it going to be, you know, 1 versus 4, which is the way you described it, but another way to describe it is it's the number one team in the AP poll against the number one team in the coaches poll, because Virginia's number one in the coaches poll, undefeated 16-0. Duke is still number one in the AP poll because it came out Monday morning, and it won't come out again until next Monday morning. And, yeah, they lost, so they won't be number one again, but they are number one right now. So we don't get this too often. A, different teams being number one in different polls, but different teams that are number one playing each other. And then the truth is, like, anything connected to Duke is the biggest story in college basketball by a significant margin. There are good teams, possibly better teams, but there's no bigger team.
Mm-hmm.
And that, by bigger, I mean in terms of the story, than Zion Williamson and the Duke Blue Devils. And then it became even bigger. Actually, I think if they, you know, were still a one-loss team on a winning streak and at full strength, it would be bigger. But Duke now having to play without its point guard, presumably Trey Jones, makes it at least an interesting story. So there's a lot of stuff going on here. And the big thing today is, you know, when Trey got hurt on Monday night, it looked severe, and it was expected to be a severe shoulder injury. But when I talked to sources connected to the Duke program earlier today, they are optimistic that he's going to be back sooner rather than later.
Oh.
On Monday night, there was at least the possibility that he might not return this season. Like, mm-hmm. They just did not know. But, you know, after seeing how he responded in the subsequent 48 hours, they're optimistic that it's going to be a matter of days, maybe couple games, as opposed to weeks, maybe months. And for what it's worth, they haven't ruled him out of Saturday's game yet. He did not, I'm told, by a source connected to the program, he did not practice today, but he was on the court doing some basketball stuff. And so I don't expect him to play on Saturday. I do expect him to play soon. I don't expect it to be Saturday, but they're not ruling out the possibility of him playing on Saturday.
Ooh.
And if he were to step on that court, then it would be quite the scene here inside Cameron Indoor.
No doubt. I was listening the other day when you had Jay Billis on, and he was talking about how Trey Jones, in his opinion, was one of the best defenders in college basketball. So clearly that would have a little bit of an impact on that game.
Well, there's no question. I mean, he's so important to what they do. He doesn't get the highlights or the attention that Zion Williamson gets. He doesn't score the points that R.J. Barrett scores. He's not the additional top 5 pick projected like Cam Reddish is. But, you know, the reason they're top 5 in defensive efficiency, it's because of Trey Jones and his ability to pressure the ball at the point of attack. It's his ability to run the team. He's got incredible defensive instinct. He is a first-year player, but he does not walk like a first-year player, talk like a first-year player, act like a first-year player, play like a first-year player. And so his loss is significant. Duke's not the same team without him. They're still good with him. They've got 3 lottery picks on the court, even when he's not on the court. but they're different without him. And if, you know, you saw that Monday night after he went out. You'll see it tomorrow if he doesn't play. But the good news for Duke fans is that you don't have to worry anymore about having to go through the bulky ACC schedule and the NCAA tournament without Trey Jones. He's going to be back soon.
Man, awesome news. All right, listen, GP, appreciate your time today. We'll catch up with you tomorrow.
I'll be here. Thanks, buddy. I'll see you.
Number 4 Duke hosting number 1 Virginia on Saturday. Seats already going for 700 for the nosebleeds.
Yeah, that's a good
upwards
game.
Of 4,200 for near courtside.
I'll watch it on the good TV.
Yeah, I'll just take it in via the tube and spend my, you know, cable bucks, whatever. Yeah. All right, John Martin, when we come back, Matt Stargate for GP, 92.9 FM ESPN.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Being Rick Ross, she seen it made me always feel like a boss, she said I'm in the wrong hole.
I'm not going to joke, we're driving the other day, listening to the show, and my son picks up on the lyric about, talking about the alligator, I'm not talking Lacoste.
Yes.
He thought it was something about cost or something like that, so he's very excited now to realize that it's Lacoste and what that all means.
Yeah.
Educating people every day. That's
also,
what, that's
even
what you
the
guys
songs,
are doing.
Even the songs
that's
educating.
That's what you do on this show every single day. God bless the two of you.
Oh.
It's time for the big interview with John Martin from the Jason and John Show.
Award-winning writers, athletes, coaches, the biggest names in sports. It's the Gary Parrish Show Big Interview. Presented by Ruth's Chris Steakhouse in Memphis. Now on 92.9 FM ESPN.
John Martin, Matt Stark in Memphis. How are you today, buddy?
Hey, man, I'm doing well. I'm also in Memphis, like you.
Wonderful, wonderful. Rep the 901 all the time.
So we've
got Penny saying in Memphis announcing that it's a throwback game on Saturday, but then apparently from the conversation that I gleaned from the commercial appeals beat writer Drew Hill and Jeffrey Wright during the Eric Hasseltine show just about an hour or so ago, it sounds like Penny wasn't 100% saying they're going to be in Memphis State gear. Like, was this a secret they were, like, trying to keep a secret and then they decided to tell the fans about it and now, like, they're still hoping it's a secret? Like, I don't get what they're doing. Are they wearing their uniforms or not?
Well, no, I mean, they tweeted out this morning.
Yes!
So I don't think they were trying to keep anything. I just don't know, like...
It sounded like Penny was kind of playing both sides of the fence.
It's a throwback game with throwback uniforms saying Memphis State, right?
They don't say that in their release.
I want to say there was a game where, you know, it was a Joe Jackson team where they
was. Yes. Joe and Tark and Will.
Was it Memphis State?
I don't remember.
Was it Memphis?
Let me Google it. Let me see.
It had to have been Memphis State, right? What else would it be?
Yeah. So I don't know that it said State, though. They had, like, the white uniforms. I remember they were white with, like, the – but it was, like, a different color, blue. I don't know. We'll need to look that up.
The football team did it.
I want to say it was, like, a navy blue, maybe. Like, I don't know. It's, like, really weird. I remember it, like, fondly, though. It happened one time.
Yes.
I can't remember. It had to be Memphis State. I mean, what else would it possibly? It wouldn't be West Tennessee Normal School.
No. It wasn't like the pros or anything like that. No. Here's what the release said. University of Memphis Men's Basketball American Athletic Conference game against SMU, blah, 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 will be the annual Memphis State throwback game. Doesn't say anything about the players. It says fans are encouraged to wear their favorite Memphis State gear to the game.
And this is the first annual, because I don't remember this.
Will be the annual. It just says annual.
We've deemed this annual now, starting now.
Starting right now. It's annual. And we may or may not be in our Memphis State gear, but we want all of you to wear your Memphis State
gear. It's cool.
I like it. Either way, I like it. Like, I'm sure they'll sell a ton of apparel, and everybody likes, you know, reminiscing about the good old days. So just
They definitely do. There was a, there was a bit of a campaign maybe 2 years ago where, I'm looking at it right now. I probably shouldn't be, but it's a white jersey.
Yep.
They were still in Conference USA. It was honoring Larry Finch. It had
That's
the 21
what it was.
On it.
Okay.
And it doesn't say Memphis State though. It says Memphis.
Right.
Okay.
Okay.
You can find that. You can find that picture. It says Memphis though.
She put Hardaway on the jerseys too. Just put all make them all Hardaway jerseys.
There you go.
Yeah, I know that's like that, they're really sensitive about that.
Yeah.
In terms of like the brand, because they don't want to confuse it, you know. So I'm sure they'll have some kind of, you know, nod to the past, though, for sure.
So Penny,
some way or another.
In addition to announcing that kind of today, yesterday was the big reveal on Get Up that Little Penny is coming back in some sort of capacity. We haven't quite gleaned exactly what that is. But then what really has transpired, and I know you and Jason were talking about it earlier today, that Penny was, of course, asked about the whole Rick Barnes thing. And Brad and I were talking about that. I think, and I didn't get to hear what you guys said about it, so I'm interested to hear. I think a veteran coach, one maybe decides, you know what, guys, yeah, in a funny way, you know, we're moving on, whatever, kind of brushing it off, not in a rude, you know, it's a fun morning show and you're on there and I'm sure they kind of briefed you, but like, we're not going to go back down there again. But Penny, like, didn't back down, and back down's not the right word, but he didn't shy away from it, is what I'm trying to say. He simply repeated what he said last month, minus, you know, the F-bomb, and it's got Vols fans, I guess, from what Brad's telling me, feeling some kind of way again today about all that from a month ago.
Yeah, I mean, that definitely happened. You know, Jalen, I thought, led Penny down that road. I mean, it was a silly question, and it really wasn't even a question. It was just Rick Barnes feels some type of way about you, and you know, they're both former NBA players, and so I think they were just having a little bit of fun. And you know, I don't think anybody else asked that question, honestly. I mean, it happened a month ago.
Right.
And maybe in a perfect world, you say, you know, we said what we had to say back then, and it's dead now. But, you know, Penny doesn't mind mixing it up, which I think is, you know, good for us. So, I'm honestly over it by now.
Sure.
And I think most Memphis fans are over it, too. You know, I think you lost the game, and, you know, you kind of move on. You said what you had to say, and it was entertaining, but that's kind of that.
Right. Yeah, I think so. All right, they got a couple more days to get ready for SMU and their throwback Memphis State day on Saturday, 3 o'clock ESPNU. So they had a couple tougher than expected wins over East Carolina and Tulane. And do you think it's sunk into this team that these wins aren't going to be thrown right at them because Penny Hardaway is the coach and because they're Memphis, like they still have to go out there and actually earn them?
Yeah, I mean, you would think so, and you would hope so. I mean, they escaped, you know, twice last week. Those games could have, you know, easily been lost.
Absolutely,
they could have much better in Tulane. Yeah, they just ended up a little bit out of there. But
I think we're in the process of dropping John Martin. John, you still with us?
Yeah. If there was nothing, you guys have it.
Yeah, you digitized.
Kind of sketchy with that phone.
Yeah.
No.
If there was nothing else, they should have learned from last week. It's that, yeah, like teams are not going to lay down for you just because you're Memphis. You know, I mean, that should be the only thing they learned from last week. So that is something you certainly hope they picked up on.
And that's an interesting stretch coming up. I mean, you got some of the better teams in the conference. SMU, okay, middle of the pack, whatever. But then you got Temple, UCF, who's been playing way better than anybody thought. Cincinnati coming down the road. Are we going to learn a little bit more about this team in this next, you know, 4 or 5-game stretch than what we've learned so far?
Oh, absolutely, because you're getting into the meat of conference schedule. You know, and like you said, it is probably top to bottom a better conference than I think we anticipated. So, you know, I mean, I think what I've said before and just what I'll say again is that what will be the measure of this season is, you know, conference tournament being here in Memphis. You know, this is a team that they can get hot. They can run with just can they get the first round bye, and can they rattle off 3 in a row here in Memphis?
I think we got to dump out of
we'll call it an end here.
John,
thanks,
boy,
John.
Digitizing, having some efforts with the phone. And I did want to talk to him, and I think I heard Jeffrey talking about it. I did with him and Drew Hill from the Commercial Appeal earlier. Any concerns about the Tyler Harris, Antoine Jones thing? I know Tyler came out like gangbusters, double figures in 9 of his first 11, 5 times went over 20. His last 6 games, double figures just twice, and he's shooting 33% from 3. I think it's and Drew, when Jeffrey asked him that, just said, you know, he kind of felt that it was just a situation of being a freshman, you know, ups and downs of that, playing better at home, and the fact that now teams have plenty of tape to look at and see a little bit more about Tyler Harris and what he wants to do. He wants to stand out there and shoot the 3, so you keep somebody pretty much on him as best you can. Antoine Jones, again, up and down as well. So I don't know. It'll be an interesting stretch for them. Obviously, this is one of those games Saturday.
I think you can knock out SMU on Saturday.
Yeah, I think so. You'll be favored to win, and then you look down the barrel at the rest of the schedule. We'll see. Jeremiah Martin's been playing great, so that's obviously.
Looks like Alo will play.
Coming out of concussion protocol. So another helping hand in the backcourt. Yeah. Run the point for you, so we'll see. We'll talk to Jeff Calkins when we come back on the other side of this.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.